Morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Greg Aaron, Mike O'Connor, George Kirikos, James Bledel, Barry Cobb, Rod Hutchinson, Martin Sutton, Richard Tyndall, Jeff Newman, Faisal Shah, Rod Rasmussen. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. I have not recorded any apologies for today's call. And if I can just remind you all, please to say your names when you speak. This is for transcript purposes. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Gisela. This is Greg. I just wanted to say I'm in Germany today at the Anti-Spam Summit here. My connectivity is bad. You may lose me at some point. I've asked Mikey O'Connor to do the honors today, and he will lead us through the agenda and recognize speakers and such. And I'll be here on the line as long as I can. So thank you, Mikey, for stepping in today. Over to you.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. I'm going to just start us right off. We've got a series of subgroups that are going to report in, the first being the cyber squatting group. And Marika has got a document on the screen, which I think we can all read and control. So does somebody from that group want to sort of take us through where things are at?
Mikey, this is James. I think typically I'm the only person from that group on the general calls. Is that correct?
Yeah, it does seem to be a trend.
Okay.
Phil Quarman might be here today.
I'm sorry?
Isn't Phil Quarman in that group?
No,
I guess not. Actually, no, he is.
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Oh, hi, Phil.
Hi.
Okay. All right, so we have two members from the cyber squatting group on the call, and there has been, let me just be up front, there have been no meetings of this group since our last general conference, and there has been no traffic on the mailing list towards the definition. Now, what I have done is taken the summary thread that Mike Rodenbaugh and myself and I'm trying to remember. I think it was Fred and Michael Young had commented on, and I had submitted that over to Marika. I think that's where we're. She was helping us to put together a synopsis of that thread, and the goal being pushing us towards a definition.
Yeah, that's right. And if you all will. For those of you who are on Adobe Connect, we've got a document in front of us in the middle there that has, if you scroll down a bit, a draft definition. That maybe I'll just read what's on the screen for those of you. Is Greg the only one who's not on Adobe Connect, or do we have others that are also off that today?
Oh, this is Rod. I am not on Adobe Connect yet.
Okay. Let me do a quick read then. The draft definition says we suggest that the work group consider the UDRP's definition of cyber squatting as the consensus working definition. It is well established throughout the ICANN community as a consensus policy appended to all contracts between ICANN, its contracting parties, and GTLD domain registrants. We also suggest incorporating two additional categories of quote, bad faith, unquote, to supplement those specifically stated in the UDRP, taken from the U.S. ACPA, consistent also with the nominate ADR rules in the U.K. They are included in the brackets at the end of this definition from the UDRP, and then what's followed is the cyber squatting definition from the UDRP, which I won't read, and then at the... Oh, where are those brackets? So is it 5 and 6? Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct.
The additional ones to the standard UDRP are 5. You have provided material and misleading false contact information when applying for the registration of the domain name, or you have intentionally failed to maintain accurate contact information And then six, your registration or acquisition of multiple domain names which you know are identical or confusingly similar to marks of others that are distinctive at the time of registration of such domain names. So if you imagined in your head the normal UDRP definitions plus those two, that's essentially the proposal that is on the table, right, James?
Yeah, I think that's where we left the group, left the discussion, and I certainly would welcome any thoughts that Philip had as well. You know, it's the UDRP plus those last two, and there was some discussion over those last two items. And I think that Mike Rodenbaugh is pretty much, I think, fairly convincingly established that those are used during by UDRP panelists to determine whether or not a registration is in bad faith. So I can clearly see where those would be conjunctions of the other items of the definition here, but whether they constitute cyber squatting standing on their own, I think, is a different issue.
Okay. Phil, do you want to chime in at all? And then I've got two people in the queue. And I'll take others in the queue, too.
Yeah, you know, I think these points, I have a little concern about, particularly about six and the fact that, you know, we have a set of rules. I mean, the UDRP is the official definition of the bounds of abusive domain names, and where you can lose one under an ICANN approved administrative proceeding. So I get a little uneasy about going beyond it, I think, but because WHOIS data is part of the contract, I have less concern about five. I have more concern about six because it kind of gets away from a particular registration and looks at the context of multiple registrations, and I'm not familiar enough with the trend in UDRP decisions to know how often that's looked at. But you know, generally UDRP, there's no binding precedent, and what one panel or panelist does in one case, there are many cases where almost identical facts go the opposite way in another case. I'm also concerned with five, that you can provide accurate WHOIS information at the beginning when you do register, and then over time you just forget, you know, particularly if you have a lot of names, you just, you know, something changes and you haven't updated it, and it doesn't mean you're a bad actor. It just means you haven't updated your information. It may not be for any nefarious purpose. So those are generally my thoughts on that.
Okay. I've got Marika, George, and Richard in the queue. Marika, you want to go?
Oh, you know, the other thought was I think we have to keep in all of this, keep going back to the original charter grant, which is that registration abuse is abuse other than abuse which arises from the subsequent use of the names, and but actually is a separate incident in and of itself at the time of registration.
Thanks for that, Phil. Marika?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out to the group that I have included in the wiki, and what you can see as well on the Adobe Connect, just above the draft definition section, the main points of discussion that have taken place between the sub-team group members, particularly relating to that question whether points 5 and 6 should be included or shouldn't. So they're, you know, two camps and the related arguments as to why it should be included and why it shouldn't. So that might help as well for the group to review those and maybe decide on which one they would like to support.
Thanks, Marika. George?
George here. I share Phil's concern on point number 5, and for point number 6, I definitely oppose it, and I've mentioned this on every call. You can own two dictionary word domain names, and almost every dictionary word has a trademark. If you use them in the generic sense, you're safe in the real world. However, according to number 6, simply your registration or acquisition of multiple dictionary word domains because they're identical to marks would make you guilty. So obviously number 6 is unacceptable.
Thanks, George. Richard?
So I shared George's concern there, and I had a specific question in that regard. The word distinctive in number 6, does that have a precise legal meaning in that context?
Well, almost every trademark needs to be distinctive in order to be registered. So it doesn't really save buy you anything having that word there.
So you're saying the word distinctive is really kind of meaningless there?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, others want to comment? One of the things that Marika has prepared is sort of a sense of the group poll that she's got available, and one course that we could take is to take a little poll of the sense of the group and see where we are at.
Hey, Mike, this is Jeff Newman. Can I make a comment?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, if you look at the above, we're just talking about this being evidence of, not indicative of. In other words, these are 6 factors, but I don't get the feeling that what we're saying is that having any one of these factors alone is going to make you or make us think that it's an abusive domain name registration. So I think number 6 is, I think 5 and 6 are actually could be used as evidence of, but not dispositive of, bad faith. So, I mean, I think you got to read it how it's being used. We're not saying that each individual one is by itself dispositive of abuse, but is rather a factor. And I certainly think 5 and 6 are factors when considering whether you have bad faith registration.
Okay. George, are you up again?
Yeah,
or is
still continuing
over
on that point. Let's say you have a registered domain name of feeds.com, a domain I own, which there's a registered trademark in some obscure category. And I own another domain name, say math.com, which actually did have a live trademark in some obscure category at some point. I acquired those domain names after the marks were registered, and I did so in good faith. And I would be captured by number 6 even if I didn't use them. Notice it doesn't your registration alone is evidence. And so people who own generic domain names that are using them in their proper sense or even not using them in any infringing sense would be caught by that language. And so it's, you know, not fair to expand the, you know, UDRP using this, you know, one country's definition.
A bunch of people in the queue. I'm just going to run down. Richard, is your hand up left over from before, or is this a new time?
No, it's my other hand.
Go then.
So
we've got a lot of folks in the queue today, so could everybody take care to take your hand down when you're done so that poor old Chairman Mikey doesn't get confused? Go ahead, Richard.
So, Jeff, I think you're saying that it may be evidence. It's something to look at, and it may or may not, in fact, prove to be bad faith. Is that your point, Jeff?
That's absolutely correct, that if you know, not showing any one of these factors alone may not be abuse, but showing a number of the factors, and George, you can argue, A, you have legitimate rights to the name, and, you know, you're not using it in such a manner as to be confusing with the complainant's mark. I mean, there's plenty of things that you can argue, and I don't think that we should be taking away factors because you're worried that any one factor alone might be used to go after your own domain names. I mean, the reality is when you look at number 6 and 5 and 6, take it out of the dictionary context and put it into, you know, someone who registers all these different multiples of telecom companies or all these different multiples or typos of an individual company, and you see that 6 should be considered as evidence but not necessarily dispositive of abuse.
Okay, so if that's the case,
Hang on. I'm going to exercise a little discipline here because we've got a big queue this time around. So Phil is next.
Well, actually, this is Richard. I was still going.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just ask Jeff to clarify. So now that he's done that, Jeff, would you agree that then the bit that precedes 1 through 6 should read instead the following circumstances in particular but without limitation may be evidence of the registration and use of a domain in bad faith. Because at the moment it says that is evidence. And to me, I'm not an attorney, but to me that says it's actually, you know, it is bad faith. So it would, should the word shall rather be the word may?
Could we just quickly check on that? George, would that work for you if we softened that introductory sentence?
No, because the way it works in practice is that people tend to, you know, count evidence as proof. And even more so, it's counting registration separate from use. It's saying your registration alone constitutes proof of registration and use. So I still oppose it on that basis.
Okay. Phil, you're next.
Yeah, I want to kind of follow up on what's been said here. When you really parse this from a legal point of view, we've got a draft definition of cyber squatting, which starts with the UDRP factors, the three factors, all of which must be proven in a case, and then we've got this list of six, which go to the last two words of that test, which is bad faith, and it says that each of these factors independently shall be evidence, and that troubles me because, you know, in the real world, they may be evidence or they may not. In many cases, you have to look into this, and you get into question if it's just an absolute shall and not just a possibility. It doesn't leave any room for further exploration of the facts and circumstances of a particular domain registration. You have to get into who's going to make this decision, and what we've got ICANN approved arbitrators for UDRP. This attempted definition of bad faith goes beyond some of those factors. And again, the ICANN panels are all over the place. Similar cases can result in different decisions, and then you get to what is going to be the impact of this, whoever decides whether a particular name represents a registration abuse as opposed to independently a UDRP violation. And when you look at the potential recommendations for cyber squatting, one review of UDRP, well, that's a whole separate PDP, and the organization I work for has been suggesting that for months in a different context, but we should recognize it's way beyond the purview of this working group. Work with search engines like Google and Microsoft. Well, I think we ought to talk to Google and Yahoo and the people offer PPC, because I believe they're already looking at the quality of websites in terms of where they offer their services and what they pay for them. And then I'm really troubled by the third point, which is to require WIPO and NAF and other arbitration centers to provide a list other than actual UDRP cases have been decided. Where is this list coming from? Who's going to create this list? How is that? That really troubles me, because I don't know who's going to be creating this list. At least in a UDRP, you've got a formal record and a process for rendering a decision, but where does this other list come from, and what's the consequences of providing it to search engines? I think we're on dangerous ground there, because I don't know where this, how this list would be created.
Okay. Faisal?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, you know, I think we were talking about 5 and 6. I think you have to, I agree with Jeff, you have to read these for what it is here. I think that there's pretty tough standards within the definitions themselves. For example, it's you have intentionally failed to maintain accurate contact information. This is not a situation where, I think Phil was talking about, you know, you accidentally or forget to maintain the contact information. You're doing this purposefully and intentionally. I think on 6, I think, you know, distinctive is a big deal, and I think it is a term of art in the legal world, and I think it's not necessarily something like music, which is generic, but it's something that is like Yahoo or Google or something. So I think when I read these, I read these as having pretty tough standards, and it's not something that, you know, we should dismiss lightly.
Thanks, Faisal. George?
Yeah, I think we have to take into account also that the UDRP already has the words, the following circumstances in particular, but without limitation. That means that at the time of a cyber squatting dispute, people can try to bring in 5 and 6 as additional factors, but I don't see why we should attempt to enumerate them officially as being factors when people can do so later on, especially since we don't have any counterbalancing items added. Like, these are only going to be used to tilt the EDRP in one way, and that's in favor of respondents. We don't have any factors being added to counterbalance that, and so I reiterate my concern.
Thanks, George. Jeff, I think you get last word.
Well, I mean, I think that was a perfect intro. I was gonna ask George and Phil to kind of come up with counterbalancing ideas and not just dismiss it just because you haven't yet or there's been no mitigating factors put in there. I would like to see those mitigating factors. I think that's a good point, but to just reject these as being evidence or of abuse when clearly it's considered by most courts and by the UDRP panelists as evidence of abuse, I think is just kind of basically saying you don't want to see any amendments at all.
No, I'd be happy, George here, I'd be happy to go over an official UDRP reform and talk about all the ways that the definition can be approved upon, but I don't think this is the place to do it.
No, and I'm not asking for UDRP. I'm asking you to take these factors for the definition of abuse, and if you can come up with mitigating factors, then that wouldn't constitute abuse. I mean, I'd like to see that. I think that would be good.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. For example, the mark is registered after the domain name is registered. Like, the domain name, in other words, has the priority date. That should be an exculpatory factor, but a lot of the panels ignore that.
Well, in fact, I'm sorry to interrupt, but maybe I'm confusing this with a couple other things, but doesn't it say that the following shall not be evidence of bad faith in the UDRP and lists a couple elements too, or is that?
No, it's always evidence of bad faith and nothing to counterbalance that.
Well, maybe.
Okay, this is Chairman Mikey.
Sorry.
I think we've got a kind of conversational branch point. We're half an hour in. It seems to me that we could go one of several directions. Marika's got a poll up there. We could poll ourselves, and then see where that takes us. Or we could agree that amending these would be a useful exercise. And maybe add Phil and George to the sub-team with the objective of coming back with an amended version for the next call. So before we get to the poll, I guess I'd just like use the little X's and check marks gizmo in the Adobe Connect to give us a sense as to whether you'd rather come to a vote now, that would be the thing you approve, or go back for amendments, that would be if you disapprove of the vote. Let's frame it that way.
Mikey, this is James. If I could add just one thing quickly.
Sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to point out that there's already been more productive conversation and definitional work in this call than I think in the entire lifespan of the cyber squatting work team. So, you know, if we wanted to reconstitute that group with some of the interested membership here, that would be fine. I would just wouldn't be in favor of throwing any of this work back to that group.
Fair enough.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Greg.
Go ahead, Greg.
It strikes me that one of the things we're talking about here is not so much defining what cyber squatting is, but we're really talking about the UDRP in some cases, which is the mechanism used to deal with cyber squatting. Because we're talking about does the UDRP have the right criteria and case history and so forth, which points up the fact that the UDRP has been around for a while, I guess, and it's developed a history of its own. Is one of the things we're talking about making recommendations to look at the UDRP?
That certainly seems to be a theme that's emerging for me. Others? Anybody opposed to that idea? Let's put it that way, so that if we have silence, we can carry that forward as something to move on.
This is Greg. I have no feeling one way or the other. But this is. I will remind everybody that this is a pre-PDP working group, which is to look at issues. And one of the things we can do is make recommendations for what should happen next. So that's one of the things we're supposed to do. It doesn't mean you have to solve that problem. You just have to say that something's worthy of some significant additional work that's been recommended.
I got so many things on the table, I'm going to parse it out. Let's take that last one first and use agree, disagree in Adobe to say, yes, I support the idea of recommending that future PDP work be done on the UDRP. Let's do that one first. So go ahead and say yay or nay, and we'll get a sense of where we're at on that. Don't all check your checkboxes at once. I'm not seeing a whole lot of checkbox action here.
How do you actually submit it?
You go down where, you know, that little thing where you raise your hand. If you click to the left of that, you get a list of things that you can do.
Status options.
Oh, sorry. I actually was looking at that poll that was up there.
Yeah, forget the poll. That's disappeared. No, this is just...
Can you restate the question, please?
So the question would be, do you agree that we should recommend future review of the UDRP as one of the recommendations that we bring forward as a working group? This is back to Greg's comment that one of the things we get to do is describe future work, since we're a PDP group. I'm seeing mostly agreement, pretty much all agreement. Okay. I think we'll take that as agreed. Now, back to our conversational fork. I sort of got the sense with James's comment that maybe what we ought to do is reconstitute that team. Would Phil and George and James and Jeff be willing to be part of that reconstituted group to go off and try and hammer out an amended version of this?
This is James. I would.
Yeah, Phil here. Absolutely.
George, you okay with that?
Sure. I'd be glad to help.
This is Jeff. I'd be glad to help. I'm just not the best for all these phone meetings, so the more we can do on email, I strongly encourage.
Hey, Mike, this is Five. Are we talking about amending 5 and 6, or are we talking about, I mean, what do we talk? What?
I would actually tend to throw the scope wide open and amend them all. Just as long as we're tinkering, let's flush out as many issues as we can. So I would encourage a broader scope of amending rather than narrower. Because right now what we've got is language that's directly lifted from the UDRP plus language that's directly lifted from the ACPA. So we're tinkering with established language in both cases. So let's go ahead and tinker with it all, would be my inclination. Because I think that at this stage, given that we're a pre-PDP group, what we're really interested in is raising issues and having discussion about those rather than...
But I guess I was thinking, I mean, I guess my thought is there wasn't any issues with anything else except 5 and 6, and so why are we going back to the whole thing again?
I don't hold that view strongly. Maybe the way to do it is leave it up to the subgroup to decide for themselves. Is that acceptable? Okay, let's do it that way. I see Jeff's hand up. Are you jumping in at this point, Jeff, or is that a leftover from times past?
I think, I don't know how that got up. No, that's leftover.
Okay, how about Barry? Barry just dropped off. George, you got it.
I sent a link that talks about distinctiveness, and all the registered marks have to be distinctive. You know, there's a continuum marks can be inherently distinctive, you know, made-up words like Kodak that has no meaning before it was adopted. But you can have words acquire distinctiveness. So I reiterate that, you know, the definition as it currently works could be improved by putting words like fanciful marks that would limit it to something that would be more acceptable.
I'm going to draw a line under this conversation at this point, if it's okay with the group, and send the four of you off to work hard via email and bring us something for next time, because we do have a couple other pretty big issues to get through. Is that okay with the gang, or are there urgent last comments that need to be made? Barry, you've got your hand up.
Yes, Mike, I just have one question that, you know, we've circled back around this definition several times in the working group, which, and I, you know, the discussion and dialogue is great, you know, whatever works best. My question that I have, though, is why is it important at this juncture, since we're in a pre-PDP, that we nail down this definition to the exact word from a legalese perspective? It seems to me we're a long ways out about putting forth any recommendations around cyber squatting and a lot of other things. So I'm just, can somebody help remind me why it's important that we nail down these definitions specifically?
This is Mikey. I think that I'll take an editorial comment. This is sort of the nose of the camel in the tent problem, and I think that it's probably worth taking at least one more round of care to make sure that we've got the issues out. I like this as a vehicle to bring issues forward because there's precision here, and precision's a good thing. So I think that's partly what's going on.
Yeah, but so is the intent that by us walking away with a more formalized, revised definition of cyber squatting, that would it in turn lead to a PDP that would change the UDRP definition at some point in time? Is that our goal here?
No, I don't think so. I think that the goal here is to get a deeper and more current understanding of the definition simply to guide our work. And then what we will do, given our poll recently, is we will also recommend, essentially without prejudice, I think, that the UDRP would be a good idea to look at the UDRP, but that we won't make recommendations about it, except that we will have created a record that presumably that future working group might want to take a look at. But we're not rewriting the UDRP here. That's way outside our brief.
Okay, yeah, because just to kind of reemphasize Greg's point is we seem to be talking more about UDRP than we are about cyber squatting, so thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're done with this, and I commend all of you for a great discussion.
Mikey, can I ask a question? It's Marika.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to, for the record, who were the four volunteers for that group?
George Kerkos, Phil Corwin, Jeff Newman, and James Bladel.
Okay.
Well, I think, was Faisal on that list, too?
Faisal, you want to be on it, too?
Yeah, go ahead, put me on there.
Okay.
And please add Barry Cobb, too, please.
Barry. Oh, cool. And anybody else who wants to join, by the way. I didn't mean to be exclusionary. I just wanted to get a core group going.
Yeah, if you just can keep me in the loop, so in case I have to do summaries, it's always nice to be already included in the discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe the way to leave it, if anybody else wants to be on that group, just let Marika know and carry on. Okay, it's 40 minutes in. Our next item is the Uniformity of Contracts group, ably led by Barry Cobb. I'm going to throw the ball to him.
Thanks, Mikey. This will be quick and easy. Some good news and a hint of not so good news. The good news is that we met as a sub-team last week. We all seem to come together and have agreement about how the research and our findings should be shared. We've created kind of a distilled version of the research and findings, and the original intent that we're, let me back up. We're also creating a corresponding PowerPoint deck that will explain how to read the research and some of the sub-team findings. Basically, it'll list out what some of our options are and a couple of our recommendations. So we're just about ready to post this to the working group. The hint of bad news is I had hoped to have this ready for this session, but I didn't get it finished. I have two more slides to complete on the deck, and I'd like to share that with the sub-team before I release it out into the wild. So I'll have those completed today. I'll send out the revised research, the deck for review by the sub-team, and I'd like to have it posted out to the list by Wednesday morning. In general, the team worked together really well. We had a great session last week. We got consensus on how all of this should be shared, and we do have a general recommendation of kind of a preview, if you will. We've confirmed that there is dispersion or variance among contracts relating to relative to abuse or registration abuse, and our general recommendation is that we feel that we'd be better served by seeing a little bit more uniformity as it relates to abuse via some sort of minimum standard or minimum guidelines, none of which has been formalized, and no decisions have been made. We want to share all of our findings with the overall working group, bring that to everybody to discuss, hopefully at the next meeting, and then we'll take our actions from there and move forward.
Thanks, Barry. This is Mikey. Just to reiterate, Barry uses the personal pronoun we a lot more than he really should. He did a fabulous job on this research, and as a member of that subgroup, I have my hat off to him. Any comments from the group except huzzah, way to go, Barry, and thanks for all the work?
James, echoing that. Look forward to it, Barry.
Yeah, it's a great job. Okay, thanks, Barry. We'll look forward to that, and maybe I'll just exhort sub-team members. Let's turn around our comments on Barry's deck when it comes as quick as we can, so that he can get it out to the broader group. All right. Next and last on the agenda is a continuation of the spam phishing malware. Oh, I'm sorry.
We're missing some subjects.
I'm way behind. I'm sorry. I'm way off. Hold on. So next is malware botnet control. Rod and Greg Aaron are on that one. Either of you guys want to report, either both?
This is Rod. I don't know that there's been a whole lot of work done directly on this. I had some. I was at a conference last week and learned of yet another massive botnet that is using the same technique that hasn't gotten much coverage at all. Called the Patcher botnet. It's using the standard technique, I guess, now of an algorithm. This one has got 150,000 or so domain variants in it at any one time. So yet more folks going on there. I've got to get the information from the researchers who are looking at this. This one's been targeting Scandinavian banks in particular. That hasn't gotten quite the maybe the popular press that others have, or given what it's doing. So, anyways, I'm getting the information from the researchers on that, and we'll add that to the list of various folks that are doing this botnet command and control. So we've got more evidence there.
Greg, refresh my memory. Where are we at on that subgroup's task? The goal for you guys was to come up with a definition for the report, is that right?
Fill out the whole template, actually, to include a definition of the issues. I've been working on that on the wiki, actually. And then what would come next are some draft recommendations.
Oh, okay.
We've been working on the definition background section so far.
Okay.
I haven't gotten to the recommendations yet.
So the wiki is progressing, and we should take a look at that and offer you thoughts, perhaps, huh? As homework for the rest of us. Is it to the point where we should look at it, or do you want to give it another go before you have us take a look?
Well, we have some background material, but we don't have any recommendations. So, you want to, I don't know, Rod, you want to get it to that point before we bring it out, or what do you think?
We probably should, so that we can have actually something to debate about, I would guess. at this point, we've got a fair amount of background there. I would think that's really the next step, and can't really argue about the background too much.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it's almost like maybe it's time for an arbitrary deadline. What if we just said we'll go with whatever you've got in 2 weeks or something like that?
This is Jeff. Can I ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
So maybe I can ask Rod and Greg, and or actually I can, staff, if they have the answer to this. But I noticed that there was a call set up for September 29th, I want to say, from ICANN staff on their proposed recommendations for what to do in the new TLDs. I was wondering if anyone had any insight into that, and B, how that is going to be used, if that's going to be used in the work that we're doing, because presumably ICANN is now creating a policy or creating response or what it's recommending as the how registries should react. So I guess I throw that all open, and maybe there's someone from ICANN staff that could address.
Just to clarify, Jeff, do you mean just in terms of malware and botnet control, or is this a broader?
Well, I think it's broader, but it's entitled malicious activity, and I don't know any more than just the brief announcement that came out that I saw sent to a bunch of different groups. I don't know if it was sent to this group. I know it was sent to the council. I know it was sent to a bunch of other lists, but hold on. I'll pull up the announcement that I saw.
Jeff, this is Greg. I think that...
Georgie, I can comment on that, too. I don't know the details of what they're discussing, but I do know it's a conference call or a webinar that's expected to just give the community an overview of the approach that they're considering taking in the DAG with respect to malicious abuse. So Jeff is right. It's directed at new TLDs, not all GTLDs. It doesn't have broad implication across all GTLDs, but it does cross over on some of the work that this group is covering.
Greg, did you?
Yeah, I think my understanding is that there are these various overarching issues that are trying to be addressed before the next draft applicant guidebook is published. My understanding is that there's some sort of a call tomorrow about the IRT and the issues surrounding intellectual property issues in new TLD. Sounds like there's now being scheduled a series of calls to deal with those overarching issues, and this is one of them. So, I haven't seen the announcement yet. Was it sent to various groups, Jeff?
I think it was an invitation that was sent to the council, the GNSO council.
Marika, this is Glenn. It was sent to the liaison list, which is the constituencies. And if you like, I will send the invitation to this group right now as well.
Thanks, Glenn. I think that would be great.
Yeah, that would be most welcome, because I'm a member of the business constituency, and this is the first I've heard about either of those calls, and the IRT one. I mean, they're both of great concern, particularly the IRT one coming up tomorrow.
I don't think there is an I don't know of an IRT one coming up tomorrow. I'm on the IRT, so
okay.
I don't know of one tomorrow.
Someone said there was a call tomorrow to discuss trademark protection. in New
Jersey? I said that because a member of the IRT was presenting today and said there was a call with ICANN. So I don't know what it was about, but it's about IRT.
Okay.
But at this point, there is no call tomorrow on the IRT. Take that from an authoritative source.
Okay.
Cool.
Today or tomorrow?
Any of you authoritative sources, if you hear about such a call, could you post it to our list?
Because I know it's not relevant to our charter, but there are a bunch of us who'd be interested. Anyway. Okay, so back to malware botnet control. Greg, Ron, how do you feel about an arbitrary two-week deadline? Go with what you got.
Well, I've been thinking about this. We had another volunteer that had just recently gotten married, if I remember right, and I forgot his name. My apologies, the gentleman from surveillance, who we're going to convene with right around this time period. So,
okay.
I would like to get his input on some of these issues because he's going to get up to speed, get a different perspective on this as well. I think having a deadline is good. I'm just not sure what that deadline should be yet.
What about a tentative deadline? Just to put a little fire under you guys of a couple of weeks from now. And then, you know, you can always just ignore me if you want. But at least...
Well, that's fair. We usually do anyway.
So. Yeah, I know. So what's new? But, you know, I know that sometimes it's nice just to have a date that says, okay, we got to have something. And between now and 2 weeks from now, a quick call to at least sketch out a few preliminary recommendations would be a good way to
that's reasonable.
Fall forward.
I think that's reasonable.
Greg, you okay with that?
Okay.
Yeah, okay. He's fading away. All right. Anything else on malware botnet control, or we'll move on to front running? Jeff, your hand is just lingering. It's stuck in the upright position, right? You're not wanting to comment?
Right.
Okay. George, front running?
Yeah, George here. I sent out an email to the list, and I'll post a link in the little chat box. With the update since the last call, I basically added what we talked about in the conference call last time to the wiki and what we talked about on the mailing list. And using the comparison document, you can see that the basic updates were talking about what constitutes insider information. Jeff had concerns about that. And also how much time we should be spending on this issue, or whether it's, you know, a theoretical versus an actual abuse at this time. And I updated it to reflect the Ben Edelman additional data and additional color to the prior topics. I don't know how folks want to proceed. Do we want to just leave things where they are now in stasis, or
well,
continue to discuss
it? A lovely piece of work, George. Greg, when you started us down this path of building out these responses to the templates on the wiki. What was your thought that we, when it got sort of to a certain place, we would take a look at it and approve it? When it got to a certain place, we would just say, this looks good, we're done. George certainly has done an awful lot of work on this, and it's... at a minimum, it looks worthy of some sort of review, probably not on this call, but maybe soon. But I kind of defer to the real chair as opposed to the fake chair.
Hi, it's Greg. Yeah, the general approach is that this is the place where we eventually end up writing some material that goes into the final report. We decided that at a certain point, probably after it's discussed by the group, it's baked well enough that kind of Marika becomes the owner of the material. She handles updates to it, so she can kind of be the authoritative source of a draft.
So we have to decide if what George has written is at a point where it's worth everybody reading, and we walk through it and then discuss any changes that some people would like to see.
I am quickly scanning this, and it looks to me like at the very bottom, pages 6 and 7 of George's wiki page, we don't really have recommendations, and I'm just not seeing. Oh, here's possible recommendations.
George here. Yeah, I left it because we need to do it as a consensus within the group. I can't have step down my own recommendations.
Got it. I guess just looking at it myself, this certainly looks close enough for the rest of the group to really take a hard look at and maybe depending on what Greg wants to do with agendas, maybe at the next call finalize it and move some of those recommendations down into the recommendations column. So I guess that's where I'd like to leave that, unless there's somebody in the group that has an issue with what George has written or feels that we need to go another way. Marika, and then Jeff, and then George. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to emphasize that it will be important for this group to discuss and review the recommendations, as I think some of them are new and haven't been discussed before, but also for the group to think about a mechanism or a way to involve those that are not able to participate in the call, or make sure that they have a chance as well once this group has gone through it to review and make comments, because I know we've been putting the links to the wikis on the agendas for each call, but I'm not sure how much reviewing has been done by the group. So I think we really need to make sure that people are aware that it's last call, now it's time to have a close look and share edits or views on the mailing list, so the group can indeed come to a closure at a certain point in time, and that we don't have a situation where we need to going back to the same set of texts or recommendations just because someone didn't know it was already at that stage, or they didn't have a chance to look at it yet. So I think that's something to take into account.
Yeah, and I would think that if we decide to go forward with a pretty hard review for next call, that would be something we'd want to alert the list to as an action item for the next 2 weeks for everybody to really give a hard look at George's page. But okay. Jeffrey.
Yeah, thanks. Just a couple of questions, I guess, and I appreciate all the work George has done, but I think the recommendations, especially 4, 5, and 6, seem like they're more towards the development of a consensus policy as opposed to kind of issues for a PDP. I mean, these are conclusions. Prohibiting a registry, like number 6, prohibiting registrars and registry operators from using disclosing availability checks. That's a conclusion. I mean, it seems like we're going beyond what this group is supposed to do. I mean, I personally disagree with all of that, and I'm delinquent for not having put that on the wiki, but I just think we're going a little too far. The recommendation should be, if there is a recommendation, it's a PDP on this to look at all the issues around it, not prohibiting registrars and registries from using the data.
George, would you take that as a friendly amendment and reword those? Or
George, you're sure. I just put those out as possible topics. They obviously need more discussion, and even the sections above that need more discussion, because I kind of present both sides, but I don't present what the group has formed a consensus around. So
why don't you reframe those the way Jeff described, which is consistent with our charter as a pre-PDP group, and reframe them as recommendations to engage in a PDP process around a given issue. And it seems like that's a fairly minor.
Yeah, that would be consistent with number 3, which is basically more study, put it to a PDP.
Just frame them all in that context that Jeff just raised. That seems like a more consistent with our charter approach.
Yeah. And then
if you look at number six, George, here again. If you look at number six, it says, alternatively, creating rules as to how those availability checks can be used. That's kind of going in the line of prohibiting isn't the only option. So I'm sure Jeff would disagree with the first section, but maybe it wouldn't disagree with the second one, which is to create rules around how those can be used.
Well, I think the fundamental point that Jeff is raising is that it's our charter to make recommendations on future PDPs, not recommendations on actions. Correct, Jeff?
Correct.
So, you know, just I think that the language can stay the same. It just can't be stated as a recommendation for action. It's got to be stated as a recommendation for a PDP to take a look at that action.
Yeah. This is Greg. I agree with Jeff that the recommendation would be, if there is one, that one recommendation would be a PDP. This is why in the issues section of these wikis, you have to state very clearly what you think the issues are. In other words, the reasons why a PDP or some other action might be in order. So, again, I encourage you to focus on explaining the issues, and then, you know, the group will eventually arrive at recommendation.
Yeah.
Anyone's free to draft a recommendation, of course. But getting at the issues and saying what's really at stake or what the problem is really important.
Right, and I'd like to see a poll within the group as a whole to see whether the use of traffic data is really in a quote abuse. I mean, I think that's probably going to be a mixed view from the group as to whether it's actually abuse. And if it's not abuse, then I'm not sure we can recommend anything on it.
Yeah, and I think what I'd like to do is leave that whole discussion for next time. You know, we'll disappear into a pretty long conversation if we start that one now. But I think it's good to sort of tee it up because, you know, gives people a couple of weeks to sort of think about it, read George's page, come up with arguments for and against, et cetera, et cetera, if that's all right.
Mike, you going to add something?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, just a more general point on all these issues. I think it's really important indeed that, you know, the recommendations are clear, but if there are specific questions or specific issues that you know, the group reaches consensus around that should be included in the PDP, I think that will be really helpful because, of course, if we go down the path of a PDP, the next stage would be an issues report, and the issues report would have to review, you know, specific questions. So in order to really have a focused PDP, it would be really helpful to have those specific issues outlined that a PDP should address. So that's more in general for all the issues that the group is looking at and linked to the recommendations they will be making. So,
yeah. So to summarize this one, great work, George. Very nice. I haven't read it in quite a while. It's come a long way. B, we'll put this one on the agenda for next time for a concentrated look. C, George will revise the recommendations to be consistent with recommending PDP charter rather than actually making recommendations. And D, any and all are encouraged to vigorously debate this stuff on the list between now and then so that we can perhaps move some of this forward. Anything else? Okay, sorry about getting ahead of ourselves. Now we are at spam phishing malware discussion.
Hi, Mike. This is Greg.
Go ahead.
May I? As we launch into this, I'd like to mention a very related issue, which has been commended to us by the GNSO Council. That's the issue of FastLux. Some of you are familiar with that working group, and it basically came to an end after a final report was issued recently. And the council decided to commend the issue of malicious uses of FastLux to us. The FastLux working group looked at FastLux, and what it discovered is FastLux is a technique. Depending on how you define FastLux, it's a thing that can be used for good or benevolent or neutral or bad purposes. So the real issue was basically criminals, people who are using botnets to do malicious kinds of things. Those are very often things like spam or malware distribution, actually. So I'm wondering if FastFlux somehow also gets tied into the spam fish malware thing, because it's basically a tool used to spam and fish. Very related issue. I just want to kind of throw that out there and figure out if this is the right place to also discuss that issue. And I would invite James and Rod and Mikey to also comment, because they were on the working group.
This is Mikey. I'll start. James and Rod, start preparing your thoughts. I have two reactions. One reaction is it certainly seems like we should take a look at it. And my second reaction is that I'm sort of ambivalent as to whether it goes into the current one, spam phishing malware, or if it goes into the botnet one that we just discussed. I'm not sure I have a strong feeling about that. So anybody who wants to comment after me can make a case either way. James?
Hi, Mikey. I think before we dive into that, and I apologize, I was multitasking for just a moment there, so I probably missed the one conversation thread where I can actually do some damage. You know, I think first we should probably take a look at the FastFlux as a registration versus post-registration concept. I think, you know, now that the working group is closed, we can maybe take a look at that a little more closely, and then if so, probably I agree with you, would be categorized as part of the phishing botnet category, but I think that question needs to be examined by this group.
Rod, you got anything that you want to add?
I would say that if we're going to combine it with one of the other two, malicious stuff with the topic we're about to talk about, and versus the botnet command and control, it would go into the phishing / spam / malware drop site one, because FastFlux is a command and control technique is pretty rare at this point and not very reliable for the botnet guys. So I think much larger portion of where you're going to see this is in supporting spam campaigns and things like that. So of the two, that's where I think it belongs. I think that we should definitely be taking a look at what is possible, at the registration time period versus post-registration, and kind of parsing that out clearly, so that we can get a good definition, not get mired in a lot of semantic arguments down the road, like we did previously in the FastFlux working group.
Okay, so to draw this one to a close, I'm going to restate what I think we four of us have just said and encourage anybody else on the call to chime in at this point. But point number one, yes, we accept the remit from the council to take a look at this. Two, it belongs in the spam phishing malware category. Three, the nub of the issue is the distinction between those things that can be dealt with at registration time as opposed to post-registration. Anybody want to add to that? I'm not seeing a huge onrush of hands, so let's call it done at that. Anything else, Greg, that you want to kick us off in spam phishing malware before we go into the summary that Marika's got up in front of us?
Oh, no, thank you.
Okay. In front of us on Adobe Connect, Rod, sorry that the you can't see it, but Marika has started the...
I can see it, Mikey.
Oh, you can. Okay. Terrific. Marika has started the web page on that, and we had a pretty lively discussion. If we were to take a look at that discussion, which Marika summarized so well on the web page, and looked at it with the lens of our pre-PDP charter, which is, are there some PDP topics in here that we would want to recommend or push forward? What would those topics be? Maybe we'll just spend about 10 or 15 minutes brainstorming around that and see where that leads us. Or maybe that's not a good topic kicker offer. I mean, we had a lively discussion. Did we come to conclusions? I'm sort of reading this dense page here as I talk. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to point out that, of course, the focus of this group is registration abuse. And I think we did discuss that, you know, we would look and categorize and you know, possibly come up with recommendations for issues that are post-registration or abuse-related. So I don't know if, indeed, the silence is related to that, you know, the focus of the group is on those other issues. And, you know, maybe at this point in time, it might not make sense to spend too much energy on trying to do that part. I don't know. It's a question from my side.
I just want to clarify what I heard you say. Did you say that we are including post-registration abuse in our charter as well?
No, no. I understood that the group felt that as we have a long list and have, you know, made subcategories, that it might be useful to show the community that we, you know, discussed all these different abuses and basically managed to categorize those and then focus on registration abuse, but just for the record to at least include the definition and some of the points discussed around the issues to have a complete report. That was my understanding of the previous discussions.
Right. Now, I'm not putting this particular category in exclusively in post-registration. On the last call, we did have a pretty extensive discussion around that. But the sense I got was that there were instances where at registration time it could be determined that the registration was being used to conduct those abuses. Am I, as often I am, confused about that? Because I'm taking this to mean that these three abuses are within our remit, but only to the extent that they can be determined at registration time. Is that a correct summary? Rod, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. That's. I was going to talk about that precisely. I think that's a lot of the discussion last time was about, was it post versus during and the like, and I made the argument that there are many instances where you can actually tell what's going on at registration time. And there was a lively debate about all that. So I think that as far as this group's concerned, I would like to concentrate on those things that are determinable and actionable at registration because that's obviously what the group's chartered for. But also I think that's where we can have the most impact. The post-registration abuse, I think, is being handled pretty straightforwardly by most registrars already. It's what you can do or what we can do as a community to work better together at and help registrars and registries identify abusers as they're coming in on a more consistent basis. And we talked about quite a bit about policy versus best practices and that kind of dividing line. So I think that we wanted to continue that discussion was the point for this week.
I guess Greg, I'm going to defer to you on this. Is this another one that needs a subgroup to go off and do a little writing? Do we want to discuss this in general on the call? How do you want to proceed? I'm happy to lead it any way you want, but I'm not exactly sure what you want to do.
You mean a subgroup to tackle spam phishing malware?
Yeah, it sort of does the same sort of thing that George has done with, well, that the other subgroups have done, where they've got the template and they crash through the template and build a wiki page for us.
I think absolutely it does need a group. I think that group has to come to wrestle with what are the contours of the policy issues, especially. So I think we need volunteers.
There are some volunteers already listed at the top of the page, because I think we did already discuss before creating a sub-team. So for now, I think it's Greg, Martin, Sutton, and Mikey that are listed. I don't know if there are others.
This is James. You can put me on that list.
Okay. Anybody else like to join this gang?
I should be on that list. This is Rod.
Yeah, you should.
You should be leading that list, Rod.
The other thing was the reason we left this on the agenda for this week was because we had such a lively discussion last time. I don't remember who suggested, but said, hey, we should just keep talking and then form a subgroup based on what other points got brought up. So if other points are getting brought up, then maybe we can just move on with the subgroup and get on to the next thing, I guess.
Well, I think that would be a great course of action. I think that we started this subgroup and then it sort of stalled out because we didn't exactly know what our charter was. And now I think we do. We need to do as the other subgroups have and start fleshing out the template. And so maybe that's the way to handle it. And unless people have really urgent things that they'd like to say to the whole group, why don't we leave it that the newly enhanced and expanded subgroup will try to get together between now and the next call and begin working on this. Who's going to lead this subgroup? Who's going to call this meeting, he said rhetorically. Nobody's leaping forward. I would normally volunteer, but I am in the last 6 weeks of a year-long project here in Minnesota to do the broadband strategy for the state. And so I just can't until that's over. Come November, I can volunteer for stuff like that. James, you want to be our convener? After all, you're not leading the Fast Flux working group anymore.
Oh.
Said as one former chair to another.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Sure will.
Cool. You know, just convene it. Don't do a whole lot of work. Just do the doodle and get us together on the phone.
Yeah, maybe.
Marika, do you want to be included in this group as well?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'm sorry, James, I cut you off.
Oh, I was going to ask the same thing. If we can just see Marika afterwards and get that rolling.
Yeah, cool. All right. Anything else on this topic for today? I'm not hearing anything. I see nothing else on the agenda. We've got 10 big minutes to spare. I think I'll throw it back to our chair for concluding remarks, and then we're done. Greg?
No. It's been a good meeting. Thank you.
All righty. Well, gang, thanks a lot. We'll see you on the net and in a couple of weeks.